Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends. Coming to you live on June 16th, 2026. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the Jean Bosch Voice of Vachon broadcast studio, the Sansouk. I knew I would screw this one. I looked up a 25-cent word, consecution. Have you ever run into consecution before?
Consecution?
No, not really.
Yeah, right? It's a really interesting word that means sort of a string or a gathering or a coming together. Okay. A consecution of creativity, civic engagement, cultural awareness, and community significance in the bustling and bodacious heart of our bucolic island community. That was the voice of our late founder, Brian Brown. From the bound, this is a challenge to the other briefly.
Yeah, the bees. I'm ready.
I'm doing the bees today. Yeah, somebody has to do the C. Maybe we can work through the whole alphabet.
All right, the alphabet of alliteration.
Surely I'll get the Z's.
Yes, right. From the bountiful shores of Vachon Island, our bold and blameless band of brieflies bravely buzz into a busy and bonkers review of the blast of brawls that bracket our island, keeping Brian's brilliant blaze alive through weekly episodes of intelligent discussion, laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra, less is more, more or less.
Yeah, that's what we do.
We do.
Yeah, those things.
So let me introduce the brieflies. Our control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, longtime serving airport commissioner, treetop flyer. What does that mean?
You know, we named the our little LLC Treetop Flyers before we actually put one in the treetops.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, about 5 years before.
Years before.
Yeah.
Is that because of the landing strip?
It is, yeah. It is here on Vachon. Yeah.
How prescient.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, partially reformed Texan who mellowed in Montana before landing on Vachon.
That's true.
Truman O'Brien.
Good morning.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Our legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, high fashion women, shoe salesman, Pinkerton goon, and occasional co-op vocalist and aspiring guitar player, Craig Bellis.
It's great to be here. I'm under this large light that we have in here now that we have cameras that we're going to start using someday. And as I look at that, I think of a great line from an old case, law case, where the judge decided to do what you were doing this morning with your alliteration.
Oh.
And he was talking about the brave spelunkers who had only the light of the flickering flare of their flaming flambeaus.
Wow.
Whoa.
Oh, boy. Those judges, they get a little crazy sometimes.
Sometimes they need a break
from the
sterile sort of...
They may have too much time on their hands.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. In the old days.
That's what I was going to say. Not anymore, no.
Our part-time politico, affordable housing advocate, ferry fixer, Vachon Island Fire and Rescue Commissioner, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer.
Hello, good morning.
Good to have you here. And our good troublemaker, mariner, backpacker, climber, cyclist, organizer and rower, Kevin Jones.
Sneaking in just under the wire today. Good
just
to be here.
Just under the wire. Right. And I'm historian Bruce Hallman.
Wait a minute. A couple things about that.
Come on.
No, first of all, Bruce has a resume that goes on and on and on, and you're way too modest.
Maybe that'll be catching.
I don't think so. And the other thing is the way you introduced Kevin as you said, and the good troublemaker.
Yes.
Does that make you the bad troublemaker?
Well, it depends on the situation.
Okay.
When it calls for it, right?
Right.
So before we cover the news today, in our usual lighthearted but passionately serious fashion, let's check in with the Brieflys about how things are going. How has your week been? Amy?
Let's see. I can't really remember. What did I even do last week? Well, it was punctuated. We flew down to California. We flew into Ontario for a friend, kind of supportive friend for a funeral service. Mm-hmm. So, you know, had a moment to really enjoy the Inland Empire, the 909 in Southern California, mm-hmm. which is not what most people think of mm-hmm. when they think of Southern California. It's like it's suburbs in the desert. Essentially.
Definitely is that. I used to fly into Ontario a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's and it was hot. It was hot all weekend there. Yeah. So it was, you know, it was quite a time. I will say the highlight though is that I got to go to In-N-Out.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Got to go to In-N-Out, put in my order for a 2x4 with a whole grilled onion and caramelized onions as well. That was what I was
hoping to do.
I know. That's what I want to try out. It's my dream order right there. So now I'll be thinking about it because I'm not this weekend, but next weekend going back to Ontario, California. I'll be at Scripps College where mm-hmm. I graduated. Mm-hmm. And every year we do an alumni camp. So you know, basically go and hang out in the dorms and basket weave and hang out at the pool and go to In-N-Out and
all that,
get up to shenanigans.
All that Claremont stuff.
Indeed. Yeah. It is very Claremont-y, which Claremont has gotten, I mean, not that it wasn't always kind of bougie, but it's gotten that way. You know, they have those bowls that you put together, the healthy bowls
right.
or whatever, that have the quinoa and the acai and like all that stuff. They have that and, you know, some really kind of bougie stuff these days. It used to be a quiet, sleepy little college town.
Yeah.
And now they've got it all.
You say Southern California? Mm-hmm. East side?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Out in about halfway in between Los Angeles and Palm Springs.
Just across the valley there from Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Trona, anywhere near Trona by chance?
No, not at all. Claremont is much more, I mean, it's near, Pomona and, Covina, San Dimas, Glendora, Ontario. Let me just go through all of the Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rancho Cucamonga.
Exactly.
That used to be a stable in every, cartoon.
That's right.
Exactly.
The
yeah.
trains arriving at Rancho Cucamonga.
And Washington. Yeah. Yeah, no, I was talking to one of the guys at the service, and his name is, Michael Sylvana Kinjan, and he lived in Rancho Cucamonga. And he would always say that, those standardized tests where you fill out the bubbles, everyone else was done, and he was still trying to, write his whole thing.
Oh, my.
Hey, Truman, how was your week?
Well, I have to just say that I'm standing up right now because I got a major Charlie horse or cramp in my hamstring on my left leg, and it's finally starting to give way. Thank goodness. But, oh, my gosh, that was a...
You are an upstanding guy.
Yeah, I have to be today. My week was kind of interesting. I think I mentioned before that I had a friend out at the airport that... that had his nose gear fold up on him, and he had a prop strike. And so when you do that, you have to tear the engine down. And in fact, he ended up having to completely rebuild the engine, had a crack case and some other things.
That's free, too.
Oh, yeah. Boy, that was a spendy little. Thank goodness he had good insurance. But so we flew his airplane. First flight, took it out and flew it. And
you're a brave man.
No. Listen, I know the people who worked on it. It was excellent. The engine ran beautifully. But we did fly over to Bremerton and stayed at 3,000 feet and circled the airport for an hour so that we, in case something did happen, we could always land there at Bremerton. And then the next day we had our Vachon Air Service, which is the nonprofit association of all the hangar owners out at the airport, had their annual meeting. And so I made a little presentation about our emergency response team. And anyway, it was a good meeting. So it's been a good week. And I enjoyed the heat, too. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed my heat pump. That, mm-hmm. So I do have air conditioning at home.
Nice.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So, Craig, how about you?
Well, I've been gone for 2 weeks, or missed 2 weeks.
Welcome
so
back.
I could go on and on. But I won't. Now, last week, Tuesday, of course, I was not here because I and my wife went to the hospital to have a bit of a medical procedure for my wife, and I was just there, you know, taking photographs of her. So,
which was, that, you have a wonderful photograph of hers.
You know, it's hard to get somebody who's in a hospital bed who looks halfway
decent.
It looks
gorgeous. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Did you guys see that?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
It's amazing.
Looking good.
I asked her, I said, do you mind if I take a picture? And she goes, well, only if it turns out okay. And I thought, well, I'll take a picture while you're still half under general anesthesia and you don't know better.
Right.
You
know?
And then maybe when you come out of it, you go, where the heck did you get this picture?
Grin, right?
Yeah. No, it all turned out. The doctor ran into me afterwards, and I was in the front hall of the place, and he goes, I just want to let you know, it couldn't have gone better. So that was a good thing. Friday, you'll like this. I went and saw Sheep Detectives.
Oh, did you? Oh, good.
What a great movie.
Isn't that a great movie?
It was a great movie.
Yeah, it's got to be one of my new favorites.
Lynette said she read the book, which was by a different title, but the same story, beforehand. She said the movie's much better than the book.
Oh, is that
right? Normally the other way around, you know, those sort of things. It was. We thoroughly enjoyed that. Let's see, Saturday... our own Greg Curry here on the island, a singer-songwriter, fellow lawyer. Yeah. He was making a music video for a new CD that he's releasing. And he wanted to borrow me and one of my automobiles because he needed something from the 70s. And we had fun for several hours. So really quite the elaborate... bit of direction that he'd put together, and had a professional photographer out there, my videographer, and I'll be very curious to see how it ends up. It's a very interesting little vignette. So I had fun doing that. So those were the highlights.
I didn't know you're from the 70s.
I'm through the 70s.
I was going to say way before the 70s.
You also first time in a racing show. Last week.
Oh, that's right.
Maybe 10 days ago or so.
That's right, since I was here, yeah. But you mentioned that, and
I did.
I appreciate the compliments you gave me. And, mm-hmm. and
I kept you
still haven't
swimming.
Paid you for that. But
So that was the voice of Kevin Jones. How was your week?
You know, all things water, I think. Just rowing this morning. We had two times out, one in a double, one in a single. So that was a spectacular morning on the water today. Speaking also of water, we're getting ready to take a little boat trip. So the inflatable is now looks like it's reflated and patched and been holding pressure for the last 3 days. So we're on the 72-hour plus mark. So now we can go hang it off the back of the swim step and see if the dinghy davit pad peels off or not. You know, so there's
how
that.
Did you attach the patch?
I used a Weaver glue. Weaver Snap Davits is the typical product, and when I noticed I had a leak, what I found is the leak was underneath the Snap Davit pad.
Oh.
And a Snap Davit pad is about a 5x12-inch piece of material, and so as I was pulling that off, I noticed that the Snap Davit pad was not coming off very easy, but the patch that was under it came off quite easily. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, I bet I used a different glue, the glue that came in the patch kit. So it sounds like the Weaver Snap Davit glue is the better product. Mm-hmm. So I bought two cans of Weaver Snap Davit glue, put a 14x6-inch patch over the whole side of the dinghy because the fabric tends to get thin, you know, when you have to sand it down. So it's structurally supported. And then Weaver Snap Davit glue also for the Snap Davit pad. So,
Kevin,
cross your fingers.
Can you say Weaver Snap Davit glue three times fast?
Weaver Snap Davit glue. Weaver Snap Clever. No, I can't do it.
I think that takes it to 10 times right now that we have heard the word Snap Davit.
Snap Davit.
Which is a word I'd never heard before.
Which is what?
Which is now my new cuss word.
Yes, it's a good one. It's a good one. Nobody will, and they'll say, what?
What?
So that's what you say when you can't pronounce constitution.
Yeah. The last water-related thing is, you know, when you go away for a while, you need to get your irrigation on, and particularly with, you know, 80, 90-degree weather. So I was really nervous about whether the irrigation timers were going to work, and they all came on. which was awesome. And then like 2 hours later, one of them is still on after a 20-minute watering cycle. Yes. So you know what? The well's not happy when that happens.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
So we're going to do a little replumbing of the irrigation system before we leave. But you know, details, details.
And when do you leave and when do you get back?
Once the plumbing's done, I think we'll go. Oh, but we get back in August. Or earlier.
Are you going to try and do Zoom for the show?
You know, whenever we have the opportunity, I'll be here.
Yeah, I remember you did that last year.
When you get lonely, you know.
Yeah. I'll just call. I'll just get on Zoom, just wait for you guys.
Where are they?
As long as the dinghy doesn't leak when you're in the middle of Alert Bay or someplace that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you can hope for, right?
Yeah, you know, I didn't want to really bring a dinghy problem with me, but so far it looks encouraging. So, see how it goes.
And what do you say when the dinghy leaks?
Weaver snapped out.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, goodness. Well, thanks, Kevin. My week was interesting because we had a group of visitors. My wife went to school with six other women who get together every year since they graduated from college in the 60s. And they get together in the spring, generally on Vashon, and then in the fall back in Illinois where they all went to college. And it's really fascinating because Pam has known one of these women, Jody, since they were toddlers. So they grew, I mean, they've known each other for almost 80 years. And then the rest of them, they all went to college in the 60s together. So they've known each other for, another 50-plus years there. So it was interesting just being an observer on the outside of watching this sort of interaction. And how their lives have changed over the years. Mm. The other thing that's fascinating about this week were the low tides.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, all -4-foot low tides. And it's just incredible to walk on the beaches and just go out way beyond where the normal low tide line is and all the sort of wonderful sea life that sort of all of a sudden is visible. And then On Sunday, there was a memorial service for my friend Paul Caldwell's wife, Caddy, who died a few months ago. And if you know Paul, he's an incredible mandolin player, musician. He and his brothers, the Caldwell brothers, were kind of a country and western band in the 40s and 50s. And Paul just recently turned 90. But the family are all musicians, and you know, and Caddy's father was Anthony Quinn, the actor. And so there's this incredible sort of complex family that's spread all over the United States, and they all came together, and it was just a wonderful afternoon celebrating Caddy's life. So that was a remarkable week. So.
Before you leave that subject, I mean, I just while you talk about Paul, you can hardly talk about Paul without mentioning the fact that he produced 4 Super Bowl halftime shows,
right?
Yep. Was he and his brothers wrote Up with People,
yep, right,
and took it all over the world.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Amazing guy.
Yep. And a couple of the musicians were there on Sunday who had been in the New Orleans Super Bowl 40, I think it was, in New Orleans, you know, and performed as part of the ceremony. So, yeah, it's a really incredible family, an incredible story that needs to be told and retold.
You're the man for it.
Yeah, at some point, yeah, definitely. So let's see what's hope and inspiration we can conjure up today in history. On June 16th in 1858 was the day that Abraham Lincoln gave his House Divided speech. You know, a house divided against itself cannot stand. Yeah. And you know, 2 years later, that was proven in a bloody civil war that lasted over 4 years. And then in 1882, and this is sort of hard to believe, but there was a 17-inch hailstone that weighed, yeah, I mean, think about it, that weighed 1.75 pounds, landed outside of Dubuque, Iowa.
So, that was not blue ice that sometimes falls off of an airplane.
No.
I mean, that was the real thing. Do you know how a hailstone is made? I mean, a water droplet gets pushed back up it goes up and down and up and down and up and down, building that accretion as it does. Right. So that darn thing must have gone up and down thousands of times.
Yeah. Right. Quite a weather
front. Oh, God, can you imagine?
It just had to. I can't even imagine one that big. And boy, what kind of damage that could do when it comes down.
Yeah.
17 pounds. Woo, don't want to be underneath that.
No, wow.
And then in 1993, Junior, I assume everybody out there knows who I mean when I say Junior.
Yeah, absolutely.
He hit his 100th home run. He'd go on to hit 630 total home runs in his major league career. Barry Bonds is the home run leader with 762. So just amazing. Wow. And then in 2015, hard to remember.
Very sad day. Sad day.
That was the day that Donald Trump opened his first presidential campaign. So
came down the golden escalator.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's still coming down the golden escalator, if you will. Yes, right. Today, June 16th, is a couple remarkable days. It's National Fudge Day. Yeah. Something we can all get behind. It's also Bloomsday. So Bloomsday is named after the Bloom character in James Joyce's Ulysses, a novel that takes place over one day, June 16th, 1904. And in Spokane, they do the annual Spokane Lilac Run on Bloomsday that's been going on since 1977.
Wow.
Craig, did you ever take place part
in that? Yeah, Bloomsday, that's a big event. You know, Lynette and I ran in Beta Breakers in San Francisco one time, and I think there were 50,000 runners.
Wow.
Bloomsday is bigger.
No.
Really?
Yeah, it has been bigger.
Wow.
Now, on occasion, it is the biggest race in the world.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing. Yeah, that's just amazing. And today is also World Sea Turtle Day. So think good thoughts about your sea turtles, right?
Mm-hmm. In low tide, you can get even closer to those sea turtles.
You can.
Get out there.
That's
right. Don't get too close with the sea turtles.
You don't see many of them in Puget Sound, but we can only hope.
We can always look.
That's right.
Water's getting warmer.
There's global warming.
Yeah. Could happen.
Although it's not really a real thing, right?
Right. It's a hoax.
It is a hoax. Yes, as the hoax gets real, we'll see. I'm following Kevin's example of sort of focusing today. Today is a Truman Show, which means we don't have any guest. You just get to hear us pontificate and talk about things that are of interest to us. And what Kevin did a couple weeks ago, last Truman Show, was gave us each assignments to sort of develop thoughts. Let's dive into some current events. And one of the interesting ones going on right now is the emergence of the very first trillionaire.
Yeah. So here's
so Truman. What do you think about
Truman? This is appropriate that Truman is the one who...
Of course, yes.
Being the only other trillionaire in the...
That's right.
Bashan's only trillionaire.
He's a Trumanaire.
Yeah, I'm a Trumanaire. thank you, Amy. I love that. So, hey, I do have some interesting things. You know, really, humans can't really comprehend. I mean, they can't conceive of that number, a trillion. Mm-mm. And if it was the... Princess Bride, it would be inconceivable.
Inconceivable.
I don't think you know the meaning of that
word. Exactly. But truly, so I put together a little thing here. Actually, this isn't my original idea. I got this from one of our pilots who happened to have a degree in astronomy. And so he gave me this little spiel. But if you had $1,000, and you wanted to spend that $1,000 $1 every second, and you spend it, just as you went, $1 every second. You know how long it would take to spend that $1,000? 17 minutes. That's all it would take. If you had $1 million and you spent that $1 at a time, it would take you 12 days to spend that $1 million, $1 at a time. If you had $1 billion, it would take you 32 years to spend that $1 billion, $1 a second. And if you had $1 trillion, are you ready for this? It would take you 31,710 years to spend that $1 trillion.
That's a good, that really does help to put it in perspective.
Didn't that put it in perspective?
But what about gazillion?
No,
Well, what comes after trillionaire?
Well,
quadrinaire?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Quadrinaire?
Well, I can tell you that if you, another way to think about this, you guys, you know that I used to fly 737s, right? Well, right now, the Renton plant is producing 42 airplanes a month, if you can imagine. And they average brand new price about $120 million. So if you had that $1 trillion and you bought every jet that came out of that plant, you know how long you could buy those jets? 17 years worth of jets if they were producing 42 a month.
42 a month at $120 million a pop.
Each. You could buy every jet that came out of that factory for 17 years.
And is it, we're talking about, of course, Mr. Musk.
Elon Musk.
Who's winning that race.
Yeah.
The worst race in human history.
Mm-hmm. I did a little, I've looked at the jet that he, his favorite jet, he has a whole fleet, but his favorite jet is a Gulfstream, I think G700, anyway, one of the really nice ones, big long range ones. And the price on that thing, he could buy like 8,300 of them with that $1 trillion. I mean, isn't that amazing?
What about the social significance of having that much money owned by one individual?
Yeah. You know, I don't begrudge the guy having a lot of money. I really don't. I mean, you know, good for him. But man, he could do a lot of good with some of that money, which I don't see him doing.
No, kind of feel like it's unethical to have that much money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how did you make that much money?
Yeah, there is that.
Speculation.
What kind of world do we live in that
freakish,
one person can, you know, like what kind of, like what, if you just look at Tulsi and, you know, all the billions of dollars that have been exchanged over the last 5 months on rigged insider trading, the stock market, through the ups and downs. I don't know, man. Having $1 trillion, given the state of our world today, feels a little...
Yeah, and also, it also gets to be kind of an equity issue in terms of, if you got $1 trillion, what is your responsibility to help pay for the infrastructure, you know, the highways, the communications, you know, the safety, the, you know, everything that goes along with a society that helped you sort of
make that money.
Yes.
Make that money.
You didn't make it alone.
Yeah, no, exactly. You didn't make it without a huge support network. That, how much of that $1 trillion is going into taxes? That's what you have to ask. Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, same point I was thinking of. You know, you talk about standing on the shoulders of others, mm-hmm. right, to achieve some pinnacle of success. And, of course, in Mr. Musk's case, with his removal of federal dollars going to aid in Africa and others, you know, he's creating tremendous harm.
Yeah, that part I do have an issue with. But in terms of a person, I mean, good on him. You know, make as much as you can as long as you don't, you know, take advantage of other people. But again,
that's the question. You know, where did his money first come from?
Right.
And that sure as heck came from taking advantage of other people.
Yeah.
Right. And extremely amoral ways.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Truman. That's an interesting insight.
Good,
so 31,000 years, if you think about that in terms of the Pacific Northwest, that was 16,000 years before the Ice Age
exactly.
that created Puget Sound.
Exactly.
And so you think about what this region was like before that, you know. Fascinating.
That's a lot of seconds.
Yeah. A lot of clams.
Yeah, exactly.
Before the Missouri flood.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
The Missoula flood.
Missoula. Yeah, long before the Missoula floods. Yeah. So another current topic that's gotten even more interesting with some comments about the gender of Michelle Obama is the ultimate fighting championship, Freedom 250, that took place on Sunday. How many of the Briefleys watched Sunday's World Ultimate Fighting? None of us watched
it. I think we're on a big zero.
I am shocked. I'm literally shocked.
And I don't want anybody to repeat it, but I did not hear the dissing of
Michelle.
Yeah, Michelle.
Was it on major? I really was so tuned out for many reasons, but was it, where were the UFC fights aired? Was it pay-per-view?
Paramount Plus.
Paramount streamed it. But if you had a subscription to Paramount, you could watch it on Paramount.
Right.
And was the remark aired on Paramount?
I don't know.
That's what I understand
it was.
Yeah. It was when he was accepting his championship belt or whatever it was. Yeah, very interesting.
That was just, I mean, I caught on late to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
through the cheers.
Yeah, right. That's just unspeakable.
Yep. So, Craig, you've had a chance to think some about this. Is this significant, or is it just another Trumpian sort of stick in the eye for the cultural elite? And I read an article the other day in one of the newspapers, I think New York Times, about the Blues Brothers as a model for Trump and sort of that sort of roguish, you know, slob kind of not Blues Brothers but Animal House as a metaphor for Trump and that kind of John Belushi, you know, sort of over the top, you know, slob. Giving it to the fraternity boys. Is that what this is all about?
Oh, I don't know. I think maybe partially. You picked me to look at this issue because you must have looked at my resume and known that I was an ultimate...
Ultimate cage fighter.
Yeah. That was one of the things that I never liked to mention.
Along with the women's shoes, right? they go together somehow. Hey,
you don't have enough scars on your face for that. Come on.
I'm glad we cleared up that mystery.
You're pretty.
You're too pretty, I
don't mean to get into the big cultural battle here. Cage fighting is not my thing. It's not my thing, baby. Even if it were my thing, is that the way we want to be celebrating the 250th anniversary of the United States of America? I mean, to have them walking out of the Lincoln Memorial and have that whole portion of the White House that hasn't been already knocked down, you know, with this big giant, the claw over the top of it that somebody said looked kind of like the little thing that you put in a baby's bassinet that they play with, stuff hanging down. You know, I think it doesn't do justice. I mean, we're almost all old enough to remember the 200th.
I remember the 1770s. Hearing about it. Yeah, I remember
right.
hearing about it.
Yeah. And what a wonderful, wonderful time, a memorial that was, where people were coming together, you know, after the Vietnam War again, and the tall ships
in
that
New
came
York.
Into New York Harbor with what, 30,000 private boats that accompanied them up the Hudson there. Yeah. It was a glorious day, too. Mm-hmm. And these tall ships, of course, are from countries all over the world. And it was an international event. You know, that's the way they celebrated it in 1976. This is the way we're celebrating it in 2000.
No, you're wrong. Let me tell you what we were celebrating. We weren't celebrating, but we were celebrating Trump's birthday, his 80th birthday. Right.
Exactly. It had nothing to do.
We weren't celebrating the 250th.
No, it had nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
But
part of it.
Supposedly.
Supposedly, right. Exactly. It was billed that way.
Exactly.
Disgusting.
Actually.
I don't know. I mean, it just turned into a tasteless self-aggrandizement.
To
celebrate his birthday. And it wasn't free to the taxpayers.
No.
I mean, all of the security and all of the, the Blue Angels or whatever flying overhead. I mean, every time we hear about something is free, it's all being covered. No.
And what kind of kickbacks do you think UFC and Paramount and everyone got?
Huge,
right? Out of the government.
Yeah. Well.
Or wherever. Where some sort of money was laundered.
There's a little Paramount thing there with the merger. Now Paramount's the only one carrying the thing. I mean, you think that maybe it's just coincidence. Maybe I'm just a conspiratorialist.
Well, it's not to mention the promotional advertising of businesses on the White House grounds in National Park property. Yeah. It seems like he was promoting Tesla cars, at one time.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember if that was round one or two. But apparently nobody pushed back hard enough on that. So now he's gone big.
I got a kick out of the fact, remember how the right hated Bud Light?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And Bud Light was one of, if not the major sponsor of this event here the other day.
One of about six or seven, eight, maybe.
Yeah. The right is never going to give up drinking Bud Light.
No.
It's a way to buy back the base.
Yeah.
That's right. It played to his base, that a lot of his base comes from that demographic.
Right.
And he gave him what a lot of those individuals wanted. But I hated seeing the military being held up as part of this. And it was my understanding, I saw something on the news the other day, one of the ex-generals, who's a news commentator now, he said that nobody quite understood that every time the fighters went by people, they were also accompanied by, what were they, Medal of Honor award winners. And the military salute Medal of Honor,
Right.
And here they are in the midst of these fighters, and the people watching, for the most part, probably thought the military was saluting
these guys.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Mm.
Yep.
Very bad.
Yeah.
Well, I know
it gets my hackles up.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I thought that one might get you.
There's a nature of sacred space, and we often think of sacred space in terms of religion and churches and sanctuaries and that kind of thing. But there's also public sacred spaces. And Washington, D.C., to me, has always been, the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, the Washington Monument, the Capitol, the White House. Has always been to me political sacred spaces.
Right.
I tell you, there's nothing like standing in the Lincoln Memorial reading the Gettysburg Address. And there is something highly emotional about that, doing that. And to have it desecrated in that way is absolutely disgusting. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely disgusting. Mm-hmm. I am appalled.
It along that same line, it is sort of, I don't know what the word is, prophetic, sort of appropriate, that the tidal basin, or not the tidal basin,
the reflecting
is all algae now.
Yeah,
it's all green.
Isn't that great?
That's right.
So, hot, humid water grows all kinds of great stuff.
Kevin, what are your thoughts about the Ultimate Fighting Championship?
Well, I'm happier to think about it as a birthday party for him, not a celebration of the country, for sure. It's not something that appeals to me. I did have a friend who basically was involved in that kind of activity. I think for him it was maybe like a rite of passage type of thing. As he moved into adult, he was in his 30s at the time, but. I couldn't see it. It was my part of my regular day-to-day activities. The fact that he believes that that's what his base feels is compelling to draw them to him, just tells me something that we're worlds apart. From that particular group of folks who are drawn to that, I'm pushed away from it. It's not something I want to watch.
So another fascinating thing going on this week is a supposed end to the Iran war.
It's all over now.
That's right. We're waiting to Friday to get the real details, as you will, if you. So, Amy, what do you think? Is it really over, or is it never going to be over?
Well, I mean, we'll wait till Friday, first of all, right, before we have a real take on it, because how many times has Trump said, you know, coming this week is my announcement about healthcare.
Yeah,
coming
exact,
this, oh, right. Is that 38 times that the war has been over? Yeah. I mean, I think this has a different feel to it, right? Mm-hmm. Of course. But anytime Trump says, you know, I'll be announcing this, I'll be announcing that, right? How many times does Lucy have to pull that football on us? but it is, you know, it's not an end to the war, of course, but it's an agreement to try to start to agree, right? Like, mm-hmm. they're going to agree that they're going to start trying to negotiate, which is a step forward. And if, you know, anybody in the circus over there practiced real diplomacy, right? That is sort of the first step, right? Like, they are now sort of discovering, perhaps, how diplomacy functions in a multilateral world. But it's, you know, basically when you kind of read about it, what they're going for is JCPOA 2, right? They want the 2.0 version of it. Right. And there's now, of course, so many complications that they're adding to it sort of on their own, right? They're now sort of adding on their own, hey, you know, Iran, get out of all these proxy wars, right? So they've taken the, you know, the nuclear agreement, right, around, you know, enrichment essentially, and basically a way to arrest the nuclear development program. And then as soon as Trump ripped that up, right, away goes Iran in their program. And so now what they're trying to negotiate is a totally different program, right? Yeah. Like, Iran has reached a level of sophistication that they never would have reached if he just hung into the JCPOA and then said, okay, now we're going to do 2.0, mm-hmm. right? Kind of deal. And because there are important things, right? Like ending the proxy wars, the ballistic mm-hmm. missiles. Right. Now they have a stockpile of enriched uranium. Right now their science of their program is...
But it was obliterated, don't you know?
Oh, right, with the bunker busters. Yeah, totally. Coming this Friday, another announcement about that. Yeah. You know, so there are really, I think, good outcomes in what they're seeking to do. But whether or not they can get those done, right? And of course, they've taken Israel out of the equation. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Israel is continuing to hold the hard line on occupation of southern Lebanon, right? And what are the odds that Hezbollah is going to pull out of southern Lebanon?
Not a chance.
Right. Like, mm-hmm. let's get on Kalshi and see what we can make there.
Yeah. That's what he said this morning. That's just a pinprick. That's nothing.
No, that's nothing. Even though the
75,000 Hezbollah armed soldiers?
Mm-hmm.
Just write that off, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Sweep that under the rug.
That's going to be nothing. So
put that behind the curtain in front of the John F. Kennedy.
So, you know, one thing I read this morning that I thought was absolutely fascinating, and that is that our negotiators are looking at a 4-year term in terms of the election, and the Iranians are looking at a millennia.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's what they're looking at. And so their goals are way different from our goals.
Yeah. It's like negotiating with Russia, right? Yeah, when Russia just kind of, we all thought, yeah, the Cold War's over, hooray. Yeah. Russia's like, no, we're in the second move.
We're regrouping.
Yeah, like we moved our pawn and you moved your knight and, you know, here we go. But, you know, this combination of sanctions, right, and unfreezing the assets, and there's some levers, right, on the table, and the big question between, you know, carrot or stick. And it seems like, perhaps if we can imagine a strategy behind the Trump regime, how they moved on it, right, was to sort of batter your enemy before you come in to negotiate, right? I think that was in a very clumsy way. You know, let's go ahead and bomb the heck out of them and batter them before we go in to
negotiate. And do it unilaterally.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, right. Well, you know, you had Israel in there too. But it is. It's going to be, even if we say, okay, Friday, we sit down and they get to the next step in the negotiations. It's incredibly complex. We're years away from anything meaningful. Whether or not they get the strait open, right, that's going to take weeks at minimum to clear those mines out of the strait, right? So the impact to the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, even if something comes through on Friday, you know, once they start that, the oil shock and the fertilizer shock, which I never really thought about the global role that fertilizer huge. Plays right. in a very profound way. And, you know, and it's an impact on global poverty and, you know, all that's going to have. But oil prices will, right? It's summer. Yeah. Oil prices right. don't go down in the summer, right? $80 a barrel now. But what's that going to lower us a couple cents, you know?
And on Friday, are we back? Are we even getting back to where we were prior to the beginning of this war?
Right.
No. Yeah, I mean, just first of all, I think I can speak for the Briefleys and say we all want this war to end. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, nobody is saying, you know, hey, we should go on with this war. Right. But at the same time, the difference, the unnecessary nature of this war is just unbelievable. The Obama-Iran deal, that's so outraged Trump, mm-hmm. called for $1.7 billion in giving Iranians back their frozen assets. Right. A lot of talk about that. We gave them that. We didn't give them that.
Gave them their money.
It's their money. Right. It was their money. Okay, $1.7 billion. That's outrageous. You know, I'm outraged by that, is what the hard right was saying. The Iran deal, as far as we know now, is the release of $24 billion in unfrozen assets, mm-hmm. and an additional $300 billion of taxpayer dollars in reconstruction funds.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's all, I mean, I would, not to go too InfoWars here, but for about 2 months, I've been kind of like, I don't know that there's not some backroom negotiations going on between the Trump regime and the Iranian regime for some folks to move some money around the world.
Oh, yeah. Of course. These are all opportunities to make money.
Yeah. And just sort of like they got together and, you know, with some other Middle East negotiators in there and some other billionaires and trillionaires and said, hey, if we fire a few missiles and we do this and we get, you know, and we kind of use this whole proxy war thing, how much money do you think we could move? How much money could we free up, right? I'd take a bet on whether or not that was a conversation.
So we'll see who gets those contracts for the rebuilding, I guess, if that were ever to go forward, right?
Absolutely. I mean, did we learn nothing from the Iraq war? Right? That was a cover for Blackwater and Cheney to make a bunch of money.
And we haven't even talked about the people who died, the individuals, the families that are poorer around the world because of the fuel shortages and the fertilizer, et cetera, that are going on. And now we have a much harder, more repressive, leaders in Iran. The last ones had no problem at all slaughtering their own people. Mm-hmm. Now we've got the son whose wife and father and mother and everywhere died right there next to him. You know, I'm not going to forget that easily.
But you know, there's so much fertilizer coming out of Washington right now. I'm surprised it doesn't offset.
It doesn't grow things quite the same way.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Well, it grows things, right?
Yeah, right. It's not the right thing. Not edible things.
No, algae in the reflecting.
Algae in the reflecting.
That's right.
I will have to say on this whole Iran situation, I had to refresh my memory that the Iran hostages.
Yeah, Tehran.
Jimmy Carter administration, and those hostages were released during the inauguration, I believe, of his successor, Ronald Reagan.
And Reagan said, hold on to him until my inauguration. Mm-hmm. You bet
and,
he did.
And so I'm just kind of wondering the political dynamics and I'm sure that there's lots of Iranians who remember that ability to hold this country hostage, if you will, over that issue. And we shall see, right, what happens, despite the Friday memo of agreement and whatever might happen from negotiations where the sides appear to be very diametrically opposed on a couple of really key issues, number one. Is Iran's strategy to just continue to show this administration is just really not very credible? And whatever concessions they can gain from that as they try to move into a more dominant position in the world geopolitical situation?
Well, I mean, Trump is, you know, clearly once again bored with a project that he has launched. And so as his boredom turns and our attention turns to what inevitably will be next in the news cycle, what will happen long term in Iran, right? Because if they get this memo done, that's it. It's right. I'm thinking he's going to be bored with it and it's done and away we go. And then what's happening behind the scenes?
What's next?
There's one other thing I just wanted to mention, the damage that's been done internationally here, not only to our reputation, but with regards to our enemies. Our enemies now know that they can use an asymmetric form of battle against our humongous armament and munitions, and can bring things to a standstill, especially if you've got leverage like the Straits of Hormuz. Yeah.
But that's our fault, Craig, for not supporting the war.
You know, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, look at Vietnam. Come on, you know? Yeah, I mean, that's what happened there.
Yeah, it was a classic. Vietnam's the classic low-tech beats high-tech time. And it's sort of like there's lots and lots of ways to thwart high-tech militaries. And we're seeing it virtually every day. Since we're talking about the politics of the Iran war, let's switch a little bit and talk about elections coming up. Kevin, this is for you. There are really two theories out there about the future of the Democratic Party. One is that the party has sort of reached a crisis of inefficiency. It should be scrapped and rebuilt from the ground up. You know, this is sort of the AOC, Bernie, Mondami sort of side of the Democratic Party. The other is that this is not the moment to break the liberal coalition that has sort of built the post-World War II world. And what is needed is a very dynamic sort of unifier who can get things done, sort of the Gavin Newsom, Kamala Harris, Tyler Rico in Texas, Ossoff in Georgia kind of approach. What do you think? Each of those theories represent a totally different way of approaching these coming elections, not only this fall in November, but in 2028. What do you think, and what is Indivisible Vashon, you know, positioning itself for?
Well, I think there's no argument that a charismatic leader has an opportunity to move into a position of leadership in this country. Barack Obama, for me, was that leader. But I think the broader question isn't necessarily the Democratic Party. It's just the system of governance that we arrive at in the country today. And either party has an opportunity to address those issues. There are different essays that are about that sort of provide opportunities to re-envision, reimagine, and recreate, you know, the governance that we have. Indivisible's position, since you asked, is that first let's move people into government who will think along the lines of what I'll read from Principles of a Pluralist Principles of a Pluralist Commonwealth by Gar Alperovitz. Indivisible's position is, first, we need to be in a position where our voices get heard. But from Gar's perspective regarding a pluralist commonwealth, from Ferguson to Flint, it's clear from thousands of broken communities across the country that the current American system is troubled and challenged at its very core. At such a moment in history, people in many parts of the country are searching for some alternative to the current system. The opening of the system question is being driven as much by despair as by idealism. The speculative force of the American dream, in which each generation could count on a brighter future for the one it was raising, has crumbled. The Gar goes on to talk about his essays regarding a pluralist commonwealth. The core idea is simple and straightforward. The individuals and corporations who own and control wealth have far more power over any system than those who don't. In a nation in which a mere 400 people own more wealth than the bottom 61% of the population, the point should be obvious. What is new in our time in history is that the traditional compromise positions, namely progressive, social, democratic, liberal policies, they've lost their capacity to offset the power of the wealthy, even in the modest ways of things like the American welfare state. At its heart, the pluralist commonwealth is a way to think about a different system for the ownership of the economic institutions underlying our society, one which is constructed to secure far better outcomes than seem possible in a system characterized and determined by increasingly concentrated private wealth. So what I hear Gar talking about is moving towards more away from competition and the struggles and the one-upmanship that go along with that, more towards a commonwealth. And we see things like on this island, I believe Foss Miller said to his employees some years ago that we sold the company to you, right? So ownership, workers, owners of corporations, shared wealth, the ability to understand that we can build systems that are stable so that we can create that those relationships that a democracy relies on, and to be able to have sort of a more evenly distributed the assets of the country. And so I think that is a direction that many people are going to be looking towards. And hopefully the right party will be in place to try to strive for that. And I don't think it's the current party.
You know, one of the problems I have is that I think about the airline industry, since that's something I know something about. And I know that it was highly regulated for a long time. You had to have permission to go into a particular city. I mean, and then you had to have provide so much service, blah, 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 highly regulated. And then it was deregulated. And when that happened, fares came down. A whole bunch of new startups started, and competition took over. And we had a robust system. Now, some people went bust doing that, but it was a robust system. Mm-hmm. And so my point is, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater on this. I think we need to have that, not necessarily unregulated, but that free market that allows companies to compete. I think that once you stifle some of that, you stifle the advantages that are apparent in that. Just my thought.
But I mean, deregulation of the airline industry worked until it didn't, though.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Like here we are now, and I think there are now fewer airlines than there were. Before deregulation.
There are.
So, right, somewhere in the middle is where's that guiding hand mm-hmm. of capitalism, right? Like when does the guiding hand come in right. and say, capitalists, you've abused your position? And kind of feels like we're there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see there's a dichotomy in my mind between competition and cooperation.
Yeah.
And competition and a scarcity mindset is I need to make sure to have enough resources that I can survive and everybody else can, you know, suffer the consequences. When you have an abundance mindset, cooperation can lead to achievements that otherwise couldn't be done. So somewhere I think the balancing of those things. Yeah, and I hear you, Truman.
But a perfect
there's
example
gotta be a balance in some
a perfect ways. Example of that is unions. Our unions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find that if the corporation is willing to work with the union, they can accomplish a heck of a lot of good things. I mean, I know that all of the safety features that occurred in the airlines came from the union. That's where it came from. And the work hours and all of those things came through the union. But when you have a company that tries to fight the union, it does not work. I mean, you have to have that moderation in between the two organizations. And mm-hmm. it addresses what you're talking about, Kevin.
Yeah.
There has to be a cooperation, a way to move forward that works both.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're almost out of time here. So thank you, Kevin. Some interesting thoughts to consider here. And a debate we'll come back to, I'm assuming, in future Truman shows. So before we sign off here next week, Amy, what do you have coming up?
Next week, we have the most adorable and wonderful slate of unofficial mayor candidates right. for Vashon Island for the race for unofficial mayor to be determined at Strawberry Festival. And we'll have the candidates here to state their platforms and their cuteness and their wonderfulness.
Roof.
Many arfs,
yes.
some ohs, and some ahs.
Yes, well, and votes can be bought.
Votes can be bought. It is
we skip with the American tradition. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. On display.
Yeah, well, thanks for listening. And so for Truman, Kevin, Craig, and Amy, I'm Bruce. We thank you for listening, and we will see you again next week on the Brown Briefly.